right, well, we're going to get started since we only have an hour. Thank you all for coming to our brand workshop. My name is Lisa Valentine. I'm the Director of Travel at the University of Arizona, and I'm very happy to introduce Dawn Rodney, who most of you heard this morning from National Geographic. She's the Vice President of Marketing and Branding, and I'm going to just turn it over to her because she has some situations and will answer lots of questions. So just know I have a microphone and she has a microphone, so if you have a question where we're at, because we need to use the microphones to record, okay?
Good morning, everybody. Thanks for coming. I don't have a lot of setup. When I was talking to Lisa, I really wanted to make this interactive. I wanted to be available to you guys for a lot of questions. But I do really want to challenge you because I am a big believer in really understanding your why. And I thought we could do some things as a group that can help you get to what your why is. Lisa asked me to tell you a little bit about myself, and I'm going to try and not repeat what Jean said in the last session. I have been doing brand work, as I think about it, since I was a kid. I was the kid who sang the song for the Big Mac, if you guys remember that song. I was the kid who knew the jingle for Alka-Seltzer. I was the one who was constantly watching brands and didn't even realize that I was a real student of what people were doing from a brand standpoint. And that has carried over into every single thing that I do. And to this day, you know, I really do pay attention to what brands are doing. My experience in brand has really evolved. Back in the day when I was in local television, it was really when this idea of what is a brand was coming into its own, really taking a lot of cues from advertisers and bringing that into the television world. And I remember doing things like, we had proprietary language. We had we had very consistent guidelines. But really the way that brand has evolved over the years is really understanding the DNA of your brand and really uncovering your purpose and making that, rather than having these strict rules about what you can and cannot do with the brand, because I hate, by the way, being known as the brand police. Although I will tell people to stop using our yellow icon in certain ways. It's amazing what people do to it. I had a shocker just 2 weeks ago when somebody put their logo and our logo together, and I was like, ah! So, you know, I do think my understanding of brand has really evolved over the years. And I do think the world that we live in today, that brands are more relevant than ever, more important than ever. I think the number of choices that people have and the number of same choices that people have, that your brand is your differentiator and your brand is what is going to keep them coming back to you. So this session, sorry, I have to go back here. The session is really about winning the eyes and hearts of your consumers, and I really believe that that happens through the brand work that you do. How many of you in the room are from the tour operator side? Wow, a lot of you. Awesome. How many are from the travel planner side? Oh, kind of half and half. That's really great. As you think about, can somebody tell me what, you know, I was doing this big brand challenge. From the tour operator side, what's your biggest challenge? Does anybody want to share? Yeah. Wait, hold on.
Rumit Mehta with Immersion Journeys, New York-based company. It's how to differentiate. We all call ourselves specialists. I'm a specialist in Africa and South Asia, but so are 1,000 others.
Right.
And why would a travel planner or any consumer come to me versus the 6 others? Mm-hmm. And I faced that challenge every day, despite being in the industry for as many years as I have, continuously trying to justify why me.
Have you come to any conclusions? Have you defined why you at this point?
Because I'm the coolest and best looking guy.
Okay, that's awesome.
No.
That's
crazy. And it was intriguing. You actually, in your earlier session, you actually validated a few things that the way we approach our brand. Agreed that the logo is not necessarily your brand. it's about how you approach the customer and creating the level of trust. And so at least I'm doing something right. And I think over the 12 years I've been doing this, has probably been the reason why clients, we had the client retention. Because I think about 95% of our business is strictly referral business.
Right.
And the other 5 is people just showing up at trade shows or me working them for several years before they eventually turn around and come to us.
And is that a B2B, from a B2B or a B2C?
In this, where we're sitting today, it's a B2B, as in travel planners and us,
right.
But the 60% of our business, 60 to 70, is a B2C, direct to consumer. And that's who we go after. We don't work through any other agencies of any sort.
For your work with customers, do you have that one word that sets you apart?
High touch.
High touch?
Yeah.
Okay. So what makes that different? I'm going to challenge you. What makes that different than anybody else who would do a high touch approach? Is that really differentiator?
The moment that you say high touch, initially I always felt clients thought high touch meant more expensive. And high touch is not necessarily more expensive. It doesn't cost money to provide that extra level of delivery or answering an email on time or picking up the phone. And I'm the owner of the company, so 75% of the time, either I'm picking up the phone or a colleague. Mm-hmm. And that sort of created its own challenge for me, explaining to people that just because I'm giving you that extra delivery is not costing you that much more.
Right.
Because I don't believe that high-level, high-touch customer service should equate to dollars. Mm-hmm. It should be, it's part of the package. And not make travel a commodity was the other sort of very important thing.
And that goes back to that relationship that you're building with your customers, I think. As you guys, is there anybody who, as you've been thinking about over the last hour, as I've been talking about your why, is there anyone out there who goes, I know our why, I understand our why? Is anybody in the room? Nobody's willing to share? Thank you, Lisa.
Jorge Perez, Tierra del Volcán. Maybe more than the why of my company is why I got into tourism. And,
that's great.
By the way, I'm from Ecuador, South America.
I love Ecuador.
I'm glad you like it. So, you know, I think tourism could be this great tool to connect the planet and to humanize it somehow. Mm-hmm. You know, so I always say that when you think about Iraqis, you don't think them as humans somehow. You know they're humans, but they're just Iraqis. But when you travel and connect with them, and when you get to know them, and at the end you see that you have the same expectancies and the same questions about life. And so I think that tourism is this great tool to connect the planet and to change a little bit of our values. You know, somehow I like when you say the why is not money.
Right.
For me, money is a consequence of a job well done.
That's right.
So, you know, but somehow it changed what success is. It changed from money to experiences. At the end of the day, what people take in their lives is experiences. And so we're able to share these and experiences that will transform our lives. So I think that we need to behave as a species better with the planet. And tourism is a great tool to connect humans with the planet, I mean in ecotourism.
Right.
And through it, connect with other humans and transform our vision of what we need in life. So what is beautiful about tourism is that allowed you to be whomever you want to be when you're traveling, to become whatever you want to become. So you said my clients want to become explorers, so suddenly you become
right.
an explorer. Or suddenly you become a mountaineer, even though it's the first time you're going to climb a mountain. So for me, that's the reason why I got into tourism, because I think it's this great tool to change the world somehow. I think tourism,
and
it is the tool that changes.
And that's a wonderful why. That's a wonderful why. I mean, that's so aspirational. And I totally agree with you that travel allows you, when people understand that we're more the same than different, then all of a sudden you have, I mean, the implications of that is a greater tolerance, a greater care, and it's just, it's amazing when you start thinking about your why and why you exist, that the power of what you can do in your own way through your travel experiences, whether you're a travel planner or a tour operator, it doesn't matter. But when you can really find those moments and then make sure that those moments, you know, if your why is really about connecting people and helping people understand other cultures, then all of a sudden, you know, that becomes a key way that you talk to people, a key way that you build experiences, and you build it around that. And that's the wonderful thing about finding your why. Is there anybody else? So I want to challenge you, and I'd love for you to just sit for a minute or two and write down, hopefully you have pens and paper, write down if you have a mission of your organization. You don't have to get to why yet. Let's talk about your mission. And if there's anything, as you think about the mission of your organization, if there's any one component of you think, just like what we did, that Sarah and I did with Boston University, is there something that you can connect it? If you own your own company, what is that why? If you're connected with a larger company, what's the mission of that company? If you're connected with a university, what's the mission of the university? And see if you can find that component that you can build off of. All right, I'm going to take like 2 minutes, and I'm going to shut up, and I'm going to let you think, and then we'll come back, and I'm going to ask for people to tell me some things. How you guys doing? I want to kind of keep us moving. I don't know, I have no sense of time. So I don't know if it's been 30 seconds or 2 minutes yet. But anybody ready to share? Anybody want to share? Yes, right there.
I actually found the why in the stories of our travelers when they come back and tell us what wonderful experience they had. This particular alumni, she had taken a trip to Cuba, and she came back, and I interviewed her for our blog. And the one thing that she told me still stays with me. She said the big reason why alumni trips are special is because it connects us back in time to a place we all shared. And I'll never forget that. That just kind of stayed with me throughout the program. And she said on her trip there were 8 other people that she got really close to, and they had all gone to Arizona State, but at different times. And she said, even though there were decades separating when we went to ASU, we still had similar stories. And in sharing those stories, that brought us close together. And then as we were taking our tours, that made it special for us. And I would always travel in the company of Sun Devils. That's kind of what she said.
So your why is about shared experiences. I love it. If you, and again, I love, because I came from television, I like to distill it down to its simplest form. So shared experiences become your why, and then how the implications of that then from the way you communicate with your travelers when as you promote your trips, as you work with the tour operators to figure out how do you make sure that during those experiences that there are opportunities for that your alumni to really have moments, you know, not that you have to prescribe those moments because some of that happens and should happen naturally and organically, but there are things you could do during the experience that could facilitate that connection and those shared experiences in a greater way. And really think about that. But I love that as a why. That's really excellent. Anybody else wants to share? There. And then we'll go over here.
My name is Anita, and I work at Colorado College, and we have this fabulous niche that sets us apart from other liberal arts institutions in that our students study on the block plan. So they learn one subject at a time for 3.5 weeks, rinse and repeat 8 times throughout the year. So 75 to 80% of our students go off and do foreign travel study.
Oh, that's wonderful.
So before they even leave school, they're already well-versed in travel around the world. And as alums, it's very easy for me to create some experiences for them. But what they tell us in feasibility studies and focus groups is that they want to relive the CC experience. And I just wanted to thank you for sort of bringing it back for me to put them in the middle of the experience in our photographs. Because all our brochures show beautiful destination photographs. They're kind of impersonal. They're gorgeous, but they're not about them. And
that's
so
right.
I got that as a takeaway, and I want to thank you for that.
You're very welcome. Thank you. I did want to go back to the shared experience, because I think that's also what you're talking about, the shared experience. I did have the wonderful opportunity to go to the Galapagos, and I went on a National Geographic Lindblad trip. And I will tell you, these are what I love about our trips is that you find a lot of like-minded people on those trips. We have the same set of attitudes and behaviors. We want to learn about the world, and we want to really discover new places and new things. And the people that I traveled with, I am still in touch with. So I didn't go. I went with my 6-year-old daughter. She was the only kid on the trip. It was a little stressful, but it was wonderful for her, and I have about 5 new friends that I have kept in touch with over the last 4 or 5 years since I've taken that trip that have been wonderful companions that I see every once in a while. They travel to D.C. So those shared experiences are a wonderful thing to build upon as you are thinking about. And as you think about that community of travelers that you're building and the relationship you're building, how are you allowing them to communicate? The folks at our expeditions, a lot of the conversations we've had is what is that post-trip community that we're building? And what is your post-trip communication to make sure that these people who are forming these wonderful bonds on these trips, how do you make sure that continues afterwards? I know you had also a why.
Hi, I'm Enrica, and I come from Italy. Sorry for my English.
I was just in Italy last year.
Really?
Oh, I traveled Tuscany. It was fabulous.
Wow.
See, you can tell I love to travel.
Yes. So I will read you what I wrote down. My mission is transmitting the passion I have for my job and my country and for doing programs to my customers through experiences, emotions, and connections with local people. And another mission I have is to find out new people and new experiences to arise emotions in my customers. So I think it's very important to get connections with the local people because we can learn a lot of things from them.
I love that because as someone who travels, and when I went to Tuscany, it was very much independent travel. I, went with a couple of my friends, and we just got a hotel and a car, and I got lost a lot, I have to tell you. But I met wonderful local people. I got lost and ended up in a restaurant where no one spoke English, and the American ladies were there, and the whole town knew, and they just basically came out, and somebody who spoke English actually told me I was about to eat, I think it was like cow's liver or something, and I was like, thank God somebody spoke English. But I think that local, that real local connection is really important, and I love that. So I think as you think your mission, now think about the purpose, since you've zoned in on that, I think we can build a why around that as well. Why is that important to the local connection? Why is that local connection important? Yes.
I'm an American tour operator specializing in Israel and in Central Europe. I think that my why is to take what a mochilero or a traveler that is going to a destination for 2 months or for 3 months has all the time in the world to smell, to taste, to digest, to learn, to think, to talk to strangers, and to package it in such a way that in a group travel, the people will be able to do all those things. Actually, I see a journey as a live laboratory in a way. It's our responsibility to create a softness, package, atmosphere, relaxed. I love the video that you showed before of the Airbnb.
I know it.
It's an amazing one. To cause them to feel that they are, in a way, that they are like at home, even though they are not at home, they are in a strange culture. And if we can package an experience that will help them to taste, to smell, to feel, to learn, and to talk to one another, we are going to fulfill our missions, our mission. One of the people have mentioned yesterday or the day before yesterday a tool that he have used, that he's using, I don't remember in which country, in which they are using a system that they are causing the people to talk to people in the street. When one talks to people in the street, when one meets artists, when one meets people in stores, when one meets musicians, when one meets... He is actually working on all his senses, and that's basically our mission.
Very cool. When you were describing your mission, I was like, wow, that feels like family. You know, I don't know, the word family came to my mind, and when you spend that much time with people, and if you're stopping, you're able to engage with one another and live with people, right? That really, for me, comes down to family and how important that is. So I don't know if that's helpful to you, but that was the first thing as you were talking that I was thinking about, that idea of family could be really important to your why. Yes, right here.
Yeah, I really love the word family because literally it means father and mother, I love you. And actually the whole world is a big family. I am from the China National Tourist Office, and I think our why is to encourage people to visit China. And through traveling in China, we hope that we can share with them what we can offer so that they can better understand, appreciate, and maybe fall in love, you know, the beautiful landscape, the delicious cuisine, and the hospitable people. And of course, it is also our purpose to have them to entertain and maybe enlighten themselves, because China is a different world, and we hope that through the visit they can learn China better and appreciate the way we live.
Can I ask you something? Because I think that's great. If they learn and appreciate China more, what do you hope happens as a result of that? So if they fall in love with China, is it that they will continue to return to China, that they will, I don't know, I'm trying to get to the emotion of what, and that end result? What is the outcome of that appreciation? Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, of course. Because, you know, I always believe that travel and tourism is a bridge to, you know, for friendship among peoples. So there is, from time to time, distorted information about a destination,
right,
which discourages people to visit the place. So, and, you know, people in different parts of the world, they have different beliefs and values. Mm-hmm. Sometimes, probably we don't buy in the values, but we should stand in their shoes and to try to understand and maybe appreciate why they believe in those, you know, values.
Right.
Yeah.
Very good. Thank you. Anybody else want to share? Okay, over here. Hold on. Wait for the mic.
My name is Patrick Leary, and I work with Teton Science Schools in Jackson Hole, Wyoming. And we have recently undergone a whole mission change with our board of directors. So this is timely.
Excellent. I love that.
And our newest mission is to inspire curiosity, engagement, and leadership through transformative place-based education. And as I break this down, what I see is a why for me is the inspiring curiosity on our programs.
Yep.
And the outcome being the engagement and leadership. And how we do that is through our place-based education.
And what kind of experiences are the place-based education? Is that through traveling in Jackson Hole? Is that through the experiences that you create there?
Yes. We offer wildlife tours in Grand Teton Yellowstone National Park for a variety of times, half-day, full-day, seven-day, eight-day trips. But that's just a small part of what we do. We also operate two independent schools. We facilitate programs for school groups from around the nation. So it's very hands-on. You're not just in a vehicle seeking wildlife. You're stopping, getting out, being asked questions. So it's not the sage on the stage lecture-based tour. It's engaging, hands-on, experiential, you know, using your senses and being asked questions by the folks who are leading you or guiding you or educating you on the programs.
Now, I know a lot of what happens, we spend a lot of time in Jackson Hole, especially from the television side, and we work, we're actually doing a lot of work in Yellowstone right now. We're not public with that work, but I know a lot of the conversations we're having is around migratory corridors and the protection. We understand that our national parks are in jeopardy. So how much does that become part of the work you're doing? So the leadership, I'm looking forward to what end? Right? So the leadership that you're trying to do, the educational-based experiences, what do you hope to have happen? Do you hope that people so appreciate our national parks and so appreciate what's there that they're going to help protect them in the end?
Yeah, ultimately. I think our purpose is to get people to just be more scientifically literate.
Uh-huh.
So that they can ask good questions and be inquisitive as individuals, no matter where they're from, so that whether they return to Utah or they return to Italy, wherever they may live, that they have a greater appreciation and a greater skill set to be leaders in their community, leaders and advocates for preserving national parks, preserving open spaces, and being good, kind neighbors to those who are around them.
Awesome. I love that. That's very much aligned with National Geographic's work as we are looking to. I didn't talk about this, but we've got some wonderful programs where really is the end result is around protection. The Yellowstone Project, which isn't officially announced, so please don't tell anybody I told you, but that really is around protection and expansion of our national parks. We do a lot of work with marine protected areas through our Pristine Seas Project. And that really is, the goal of that is to protect 10% of the world's oceans by 2020, and we're really close, which is awesome. And a lot of the work we do with Lindblad and the ships and those trips that really do center around a lot of ocean protection. So we try and bring that into the experiences that when we work with people. All right, so I did want to move on quickly. I don't know what time it is, but I did want to move on, and I just, because this is so important to me, I wanted to make sure that we talked about your audiences and your customers. And, you know, there's so much great research out there, and I was just talking to, I think it was Maria that I just met, and how much, especially from a travel planner side when you're with a university, how much are you engaging with millennials today? Or are you really focused on the audience you have, the customer you have, which I think would most likely be an older retired boomer who has the dollars to put towards trips, right? Can you raise your hand if your primary audience is a retiree around 60 plus? Okay. I would never, I think that's a great audience. It is our core audience as well for our expeditions. But I really do believe in a lot of the research we've done is that there is an opportunity to engage millennials in the world in, you know, through experiences, and you just have to think about it slightly differently. They don't, they will spend the money. I'll get to you in one second. I know, I'm the same way. I'm the same way. I was like, wait, I'm in there. I know, but what's interesting, we're just different. We're just a little bit different, you know? Our attitudes and our behaviors are different than what they're finding in a lot of the research than boomers and millennials. And they're as I was saying earlier, they're finding a lot more similarities between boomers and millennials than they are with those of us who are in the middle. And by the way, all right, so, well, I'm on the cusp of being a boomer, so I would say, so rather than 60 plus, I just, most travelers are 60 plus, but if you're a boomer, yes, you're 53, 54, right, 55, I would guess, so 55 and up, right? But no, you're okay, we just, those of us who are Gen Xers are just, our attitudes, our behaviors are just different, and we love to travel, we love a lot of the same things, but we're also fewer. There's fewer of us than there are boomers and millennials. So the millennial, why there's such a focus, we have this debate all the time at Nat Geo, why are we so focused on millennials? I'm actually not necessarily focused on millennials. I am focused on, I am very focused on mindset, not demographics. So I really look at who are our best audiences who have similar mindsets to the kind of the target audience that I have. And when you look at it, actually, I will tell you, our biggest opportunity audience is parents and family travel. They can be millennial, or they can be an older mom like me, who love to take their kids and travel with them. We have not yet figured that out from a business opportunity standpoint at National Geographic. But I can tell you there is a business opportunity there. And some of those parents are millennials. So I look at it more that way than saying, if you're a millennial, you do X. I want a millennial who wants to learn about the world, who's really curious about the world, who wants to prioritize travel as part of their experiences. And I want a millennial who also happens to be a parent, and they have gotten older, so they're in the top end of millennials are in their 30s now, and a lot of them have families. So I just wanted to talk about this because as you guys think about your business opportunities, we tend to, and I realize there's realities here, we tend to be thinking about just this older audience, but you've got to be thinking about the audience, your customers who are coming up, and how do you make sure that you're engaging with them? And it doesn't have to be the same kind of experiences. It can just be building the relationship so that by the time that they have the time and the money, that you've established that relationship so that they turn to you for their travel options. It's just really thinking through what your strategies are for that audience. Does anybody here do anything for a younger traveler? You do. What do you do?
So we focus a lot on families. A lot of our products are family-based. Mm-hmm. We also have a program that we want to connect both generations. We have this program that we call Parent and Child, that the idea is through unique experiences and the right facilitators and questions help you to connect between you and your children. So we have the family programs and we, what we call these transformational tours, that the idea is to connect you with your children.
Awesome. And you said you, did you raise your hand as well?
Yeah.
Yeah, you, same thing?
Yes.
So family experiences.
Multi-gen. Two generations or three generations.
Do you find as a business that that's growing, or do you find that, is it, kind of where does that fit within your?
It is growing. Of course, the regions I'm in, which is Africa and South Asia, brings a certain weird level of trepidation for the younger families.
Mm-hmm.
And part of our job is to remove that fog, that safety, of course, and health
right.
plays a big role. But we're beginning to see the older people with children over the age of 16,
mm-hmm.
16 to 20, 20 to 25. And it's interesting because there are certain parents who are still paying for family vacations when the kids are in their mid-30s, and they have their family. I wish my parents did that.
I know. I wish my parents did, too. I get to go to Florida.
That's right.
I want to see my parents. So, awesome. Any thoughts on that? I want to challenge you guys. Does that scare you? Does that not make sense to you? You can push back on me. I love to kind of see things out there and then connect dots. So you were, yeah.
This is more a question than anything else. Chris
okay.
Bensley from Holbrook Travel, and probably like a lot of people in the audience here, we have this conception that the millennials are do-it-yourselfers, that they don't want to be with a group or they don't want to have organized travel. They want to go with the internet and do it themselves. So I think that's a big fear, is how do you get them be loyal to you? So I don't have any answers, but it's more of a question.
That's where the brand comes in. You know, that's really what the brand is about. And I think it's challenging for tour operators, less challenging when you are part of a university or it's an alumni travel program or there's a connection to a larger institution, because that brand means something to them already. I do think it's challenging from a tour operator standpoint. I think it's what I have seen is when you offer the right kind of experiences for them, they're not going to take the long trips. They're not going to do, you know, they're not going to spend as much money. They're not going to spend $10,000 a person or $7,000 a person for a really long trip. But they will, for the right experience with the right brand, travel with you. So I don't know. I'm going to watch this. I really want to see what happens, because I do believe that there is an opportunity here and for the right kind of experiences with the connected to the right brands. Yeah.
Sorry.
No, that's okay.
You raise a very good point. 2 days ago, I asked this question to one of our other plenary speakers, is exactly that we have the boomers and older generation transitioning out of travel, and then there's this new generation who is seeking travel, and the challenge is actually on the travel planner side. I mean, I'm the guy who sells the trip to the travel planners, and I've always been asked, last few months or few years, I've been asking questions saying, well, what exactly are the schools doing to tap into that market, and how can we as operators who are selling product adjust to that? And I'll be very curious to know from the travel planners or anyone else on my friendly competitors here what some of the things are happening, because I think there's still this gray area that hasn't been resolved yet. And my fear is that if it doesn't get resolved, the affinity market eventually may get affected by that negatively.
I agree with you, and Sarah's over here. Because I'm going to speak for you just 1 second, Sarah. I think part of the challenge is that a lot of the travel planners, especially in this kind of travel, don't have the time to actually figure out what is needed. And so it may be creating a real partnership so you guys can figure it out together versus expecting it just from the travel planners. Go ahead, Sarah.
No, yes, what you said. But also, the images that we're getting from the brochures, Don and I talked about the brochures that are being sent out. You know, the operators I work with, I can lay out 3 brochures from 3 different operators, and they all look exactly the same. I have to look on the back side to see who is sending it. There's one operator I work with that's completely different, that just sells better images and explains the trip in a completely different way. But the majority of them all have pictures of boomers on a boat or doing whatever, and so it's not going to appeal to the younger audience. They're going to say, oh, this is something my grandmother should go on, instead of, oh, this is something that I would fit on.
That's right. It's not for me. Yeah.
So in terms of targeting, how are you guys behind the scenes? Not that we're sure is the product of the show. But what is the active, what's the proactive ways you as a client are going to go with that? Is it strictly through the way you market, or is there other channels?
It's strictly through the way you market, but I'm not going after the younger ones because what I'm passing along to them, they don't see themselves there.
So you have to build the experience first, right? You have to figure out, and some of that's going to take research, right? And how can you create the focus groups or get the information for what kind of trips do they want and how you build those trips? And that's why I think this partnership between the planners and the tour operators is going to be really critical to figure this out, because the onus can't be on one or the other. It really has to be the marriage. And then, you know, Sarah's got the channels to reach that audience, but they're never going to pay attention if what you're offering isn't anything that is for them. Yeah. Oh, go ahead.
I'm just going to add a little perspective. I come from a different planet, actually, from, you know, in a sense, because I live and work in India. I am a supplier to somebody like Rumit, who in turn is a supplier to somebody like Lisa, right? So it's a two-step process. But here's something that even maybe other friends from Israel or, you know, Jorge would have to say. What we find is that the same person, because at the end of the day, to some of our countries, it's the educated traveler, multi-generational in certain cases, who would come on what we see sitting at our place on a very dumbed-down program that is sold through the alumni channels. And the same person, I don't mean exactly the same, I mean the same persona, would come on a very challenging, inquisitive, almost a completely different way of experiencing the same destination.
Interesting.
Now, from a business perspective, we accept both. From an emotive perspective, you know what the answer is. What brings me here is to be able to provide the second kind of experience to the first kind of traveler. But I have got two roadblocks. Sorry, Ruben. And sorry, you. But I have a feeling that the communication, which is exactly the alumni sitting on a boat, rowing away, the gentle, I mean, look at that image. Now, when somebody were to come to a place with 1.2 billion people or 1.3 billion people in China, you'd have 300 fishermen.
Right.
I mean, to me, that's a photoshopped image, right? It may be real, but to me, it's a photoshopped image.
It's from National Geographic.
No, look, you Photoshop too, right? All right.
No, I think that's a really interesting challenge that you guys have, right? It's that you're not necessarily in what the end experience is removed from what you hope to craft and what you hope to achieve. And it can be very different. So I think that's something, as you think about your customer and you think about who is traveling, I go back to that really understanding who they are, and they are, I look at people who want to travel on educational travel are different than people who want to go sit on a beach for a week. By the way, I do both, but you know, like when I want to go out and explore the world, I'm going to pick an educational travel program over any other kind of program. But I'm going to want that challenge. I want to understand and learn and be really challenged during that trip because that's my expectation. And guaranteed that your travelers are the same way. So this goes back to really making sure that you're paying attention from a travel planner side, paying attention to those surveys that are coming back from the tour operators, making sure that you're looking at the data and that you're talking to your customers and you're understanding what experiences you are building for them. I have a question over here. And I'm gonna do a time check when you're bringing over. Okay.
Yeah, I'm just wondering, based on your example from Airbnb earlier, what you think about their new approach with experiences. Are you familiar with that? Where you can, besides just signing up for, you know, a place to stay in a place, yeah, you can also sign up for an experience of a few hours or a few days, and anyone from that, you know, location can basically create their own experience and market it to the people that are coming with Airbnb. How do you think that relates in terms of you're talking about what millennials want and how that affects the people sitting in this room?
That's a great question. I wasn't really aware of that, but it makes total sense to me, right? Because a lot of what they are built on is if their core idea is around belonging, and you can craft these really custom experiences that when you go to a place that's very personal and that you feel very local and connected to the local community and a sense of belonging, that makes perfect sense to me. I'd love to watch it and see how it grows. But that next step in their evolution, I think, is really smart. And I bet you a lot of millennials are doing that.
When you say about millennials, I think in another program that we have, and for me, this is the first time I come to this conference. Mm-hmm. So to tell you the truth, was an eye-opening that I realized it on the second day that I was here, because when I was coming, I thought, you know, this is the perfect place to reach the alumni of young people. I realized that the majority were focusing on retired clients. So we have this program that we call it Traveling with a Purpose, that besides having fun, you will do something nature-based or sustainable.
Yay.
Or community-based. And when I was coming, you know, I thought, okay, you know, these are all the universities. They have, you know, other students plus all the people that just finished. And there was a great potential there. And it's been interesting to see that market, and I can understand that there's a price involved there, was not that much taken into account. So for me, I think when you say, and I think that's a great opportunity here, is to offer different programs to different audiences.
I think that's great. Okay, I only have a few minutes left. I did want to, just as we were talking about your mission, your why, I'm a big believer. Oh, we're not gonna get to that. Wait, we're not gonna get to that either, hold on. This is what I wanted to talk to you guys about, because as I was listening, I was trying to come up with those one or two words as you guys were talking. And what I really want to encourage you to do is to really find that core idea based on your why. And just like Sarah and I talked about, this idea of connections was really a great place to start for Boston University and the travel program. We talked about family, we talked about local, you know, we talked about other things, but think about that core idea that's based on your why, and let that be the driver of a lot of your communication. I do that all the time at National Geographic. We further exploration is kind of how we distilled our what down to, and the why comes through in the communication, but the why is part of that. You know, we got to that through our why. And so I want you to think about that as you go. I can't, unfortunately, I can't stay past 11. I have to hop on a flight. But I want you to think about that, to try and talk about your why and really articulate the why, but then distill it down and make that core to your communication. Are there any last questions for me? I'm happy to kind of take some random questions. I didn't get through all the workshop stuff. I apologize. I really wanted to make this interactive and a lot of share and challenging you guys with some of the things that I understand. Yes, sir.
Hi, I'm Iran. I'm a tour operator from Israel, and we're doing a lot of MBAs. And I just listened to, you know, the differentiation between the millennials and the others. And I just want to build something and ask you, how can you, what do you think about it? What is your feedback? I'm getting the impression when we look about the young generation, that major part of the excitement maximize the excitement is to share.
They are not
with you on the spot looking on that. 80% of the fun is, look, everybody, I'm here, I'm sharing that,
selfie.
And you are not here.
Yeah.
How can we approach that as part of a core? Because I think that there's a phenomenon of creating many option or possibilities of sharing fun can maybe strengthen the brand.
You know, I think that's a great point, because as we know, I have an 8-year-old who's not on social media, but she is all about the share, right? I do think that sharing is a critical component. And what I think you have to think about is how, knowing that that's what is going to happen, how can you build that into your experience? A lot of things we talked about, and I'll be honest with you, I haven't talked to Lynn Cutter at our expeditions group to see if they implemented any of this recently, but we talked about hashtags, right? In a lot of the locations that people go to through our trips, there's the cell service isn't good, but how do you, if they can't share at that moment, how do we make sure that they can share later? How do you create a common hashtag where that can then, when they come back to your website, that you aggregate that hashtag? How do you build opportunities for them to share with the world that you can capture that and connect it to either your brand or your, you know, or the travel experiences that you are creating? But build it into the experience and build it into the moments and make it part of it, because they're gonna do it no matter what. So be more purposeful about the way that it happens and make sure you're able to capture that, because ultimately that helps your business as well, right? If they're sharing how wonderful and magical and incredible the moment is, it's gonna reflect on you as much as it reflects on them. But I love hashtags, by the way. In fact, we're about to launch a big hashtag campaign around our photo arc project, which is basically, we have this wonderful photographer, Joel Satori, who's trying to capture images of every species in captivity. And starting in April, we'll have this wonderful hashtag Save Together campaign. So if you see it, please participate. I would love it. We are trying to save and conserve a lot of our endangered species in the world. So what else can I tell you? Any other last questions? Well, I have 2 minutes.
2 minutes.
2 minutes. Any final words? Yes.
I'm just curious if you see do you see a difference between mission and why? Or, in your opinion, is the mission the why?
No, I don't think the mission is the why. Because actually, it's so funny that you asked this, because I spent a lot of time talking about this at National Geographic, because we had been a mission-based organization, and we'd still have a mission. But your mission is basically what you're there to do, right? So your mission is kind of the business that you're in, what you're trying to achieve. The why is ultimately your purpose, right? And the purpose is about intention, and it's about a bigger, I'm not explaining it as well as I did 2 years ago, but your purpose is—it's different. It's about intention. It's not just the tasks that you have to do. And a mission tends to be about tasks. The why is about intention and to what end. So those are the things that it's—it's a much broader. It's much more emotional, and it's a reason for being. And a mission is really just your job, the job that you have to do. I don't know if that makes sense. I did a far better job 2 years ago when I was trying to convince everybody that we no longer had a mission, we had a purpose.
I appreciate you asking because we're going through.
Yeah.
People are asking that question in our organization. And I'm curious to think as I fly home in the coming day about this, because I wonder what does the public see a mission as? Do they see the mission as the why? Because if a lot of our people who work for us and a lot of people who may be in this room, you know, I've always thought of the mission as the why. So I wonder, is there a paradigm shift that's happening in our industry and elsewhere around that idea?
So I think that comes in how you communicate, right? You don't have to communicate, like you can still have a mission that everything you do is part of. But the why becomes part of the storytelling that you do around the mission and the reason for being around the mission. What I would encourage you to do is look up the definitions of purpose versus mission, and that will alone help you figure out how to communicate this. But you don't have to go and, you know, they're not interchangeable. They're not interchangeable, right? It's like you have to have your why. You have to have your why, because your mission won't matter if you don't have your why. It will not be long term. It will not be sustainable. You will fall short very quickly, and your tasks that you have to do with your mission will no longer be relevant if you don't understand your why. That's what I believe, and that's really what drives a lot of the brand work we do at National Geographic. All right, I thank you guys for having me here again. I really appreciate it. I wish you luck. You've got challenges ahead of you, but I so believe in the power of travel, and I know the work you do is phenomenal, so thank you.
And please, everybody, make sure you fill out your evaluations and hand them to Susan in the back. Thank you.